This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 87. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show where we focus on everything to do with fantasy and even some sci-fi books. From epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, lit RPG, you name it, we bring you the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world. To start off things this week, I'm going to kick off with my own author update. I'm working on book 8 right now in the Extreme Medical Services series. It's tentatively titled The Paramedics Amazon. I can't wait to share it with my readers. I'm having a ton of fun writing it right now, and it's kind of, you know, nice to get back into that original series I wrote again and bring back some of those main characters and things that people really enjoy about that series. I'm also prepping things to get ready for the release in a few weeks of Huntress Cadet. That'll be on February 25th. I think that's a Tuesday. Book 3 in the Huntress Clan saga is coming out, and that'll wrap up the initial 3 books in that series. If you follow my reader group on Facebook or are signed up for my email newsletter, you will get a sneak peek of the new cover design before anybody else does. I don't even have it yet. I'm waiting for the cover designer to get it to me. So once that comes in, I will share it there in my Facebook reader group and over in my email newsletter as well. You can check out everything I'm up to and find out what I'm doing by going over and visiting that fan group over on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. Just search for that and ask to join. We'd love to have you. Or over at my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. I always look forward to hearing from you, and I do respond back when people send me emails and messages, so please reach out to me. On today's show, I interview J.R. O'Brien. J.R. is a mom to 3 daughters, 6 cats, and 1 red-tailed boa. She loves music and literature, as well as supporting alternative lifestyles and mental health. We chat about her book, Cold Crypt Cellars, book 1 in her Christiana Aramis vampire novels. Check out my interview with J.R. It's coming up right now. J.R. O'Brien, it's great to have you on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to do this. This is my first podcast ever.
Well, we'll try to make it an easy journey for you here on the show, which is what I try to do for everybody, whether they're experienced or not. But why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about who you are and what kind of got you into the idea that you wanted to write books?
Okay, well, let's see. I'm a mom full-time and very happy with that fact. I have an amazing spawn that I love to pieces. She's 12 this year and out trick-or-treating with my fiancé. And I have 2 other girls, one adopted and one soon to be my stepdaughter that are in their 20s. And I adore them to pieces. I also have a 7-year-old granddaughter. As to writing, writing has always been my outlet. I've been writing since as long as I can remember, really. But I kind of, in high school, I had an English teacher that thought it was really a great idea for me to enter a writing contest and kind of pushed me in that general direction. And it just kind of started flaring up and became more of a hobby than an outlet. And I've been doing it ever since.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's funny. I talk to a lot of people and even myself. You know, I credit a lot of my teachers to pushing me in the direction of being a creative person in some way in all of my endeavors in life later on. I can trace a lot of that back to teachers who encouraged me to be creative in school. And I think that's an important thing. I think we don't give them credit for the way they form our adult lives.
No, I would agree with you, actually. It's kind of funny. I had one teacher that really pushed me into poetry and reading things that were outside the norm for my age group at the time. And then in high school, I had another teacher that realized that I really did have a knack with words and I liked reading and I couldn't be found anywhere without a book. And they're like, here, let me push you in the right direction. And here I am years later, still writing.
No, that's great. And I think that one of the things that I like so much about, you know, writing is that we get to read so much. I think that the two go hand in hand. I don't think you can be a good writer if you don't do a significant amount of reading, both up leading up to the part where you start writing and then during the whole time you're a writer. I just think it just goes together.
I agree. I probably spend more time with my nose in a book than I do actually writing them, because I love doing research and I love studying my genre and, you know, seeing what's out there and getting an idea for what people are looking for. And, you know, I'm always coming across new authors and I'm like, how did I not find this yet? I want to read this thing now.
Yeah. There's so much good stuff out there. I think, having the indie revolution in publishing has really opened up a lot of genres and subgenres that would never have gotten the attention they get now from the traditional publishing world, because they just don't take chances on things. And, you know, an indie author can make a decent amount of money in a small subgenre where the publisher, traditional publisher, can't really make that market work for them. So it's just interesting to see how, you know, there's so much good stuff out there in just a variety of different things. I'm curious how you'd label your genre. I consider it like overall as urban fantasy, but I'm thinking like vampire romance. Is that what you would say? Or
I go urban fantasy horror with a splash of smut.
I like that. That's really cool. I'll have to remember that with a splash of smut. That might have to be my new
yes.
That's a t-shirt, actually. No, it's great, because I got the chance to sit down and start reading Cold Crypt Cellars, and
and
I've enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun to kind of dig into that book and you know, the whole outing of the supernatural world, you know, kind of similar to, you know, what happened in the True Blood books. You know, that suddenly the normal people become aware that all the supernatural creatures have been there all along. I actually in one of my series deal with the supernaturals in a world where that's almost happened. So some people are aware, but most people aren't, and the supernaturals are still very secretive, but you know, there's still, I like how the people in your world have a fascination because it's still new to them, right? The vampires exist and shifters exist and things like that.
The entire world kind of came aware of everybody, in the 1800s, but they were still really hush hush. Like, a lot of the supernatural wasn't out, and in modern times, like, everything supernatural was a real thing. And so there's this fascination and this almost fetish for some of the supernatural species because they're so different, and, you know, you can tell them apart. You know, the vampires kind of just have this air about them. You know, there's vampire specified hotels now, and there's underground clubs that are strictly supernatural, and suddenly people, you know, the everyday human being is a mundane thing and the supernatural is more active and almost surfaced above and beyond what regular people deal with now.
Yeah, I definitely got that. And I also got a vibe of like the relief, I think, that I see in your main character when, you know, Christiana kind of seems to let out that she's happy that she's able to be out and in the public like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Chris and all of her people are, you know, the ability to be out in public, to not have to hide who you are, to some degree she plays to the public and she dresses up and she plays the part of spooky vampire, you know, when she's in public. And I think she gets a thrill out of it. But even the shapeshifters, you know, they have this air about them of otherness and being able to, you know, walk the streets and not have to hide who and what they are.
And that says a lot. You know, I feel like that rings a bell in the world today, because so many people are feeling their way into being who they really are and being comfortable in their skin in public. And there's that's such an important message right now. I think it really rings true.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason I write Christiana the way I do, is that she deals with a lot of modern concepts of accepting yourself, being yourself, accepting being different and being okay with being different and putting her as a character in positions where she has to accept the differences that she has, and she has to accept the differences of the people she interacts with, to further herself, to further her business, to be part of the community she lives in. Everything is about acceptance.
So, you know, this is book one of this series.
Correct.
You know, and what's the plans for moving forward? Is this going to be a very long series, or is this something that you think are looking at as like, you know, like a trilogy, or, you know, just a quartet of books, or what's the thought?
So initially this has started out as a trilogy, and now it's kind of turned into an almost 20 book series. Because the more I keep writing on the series, the more I want to do with it, and the more I want to see the characters evolve. And I've fallen in love with the characters and the world, and I can't stop writing it. So right now I'm working on Behind the Mask, which will be officially book two. I'm hoping to have it to my betas by the end of December, crossing my fingers, hopefully sooner. But book two kind of goes above and beyond what Cold Crypt Cellar does. Behind the Mask kind of is about double the length right now, and really gets in depth into Christiana's world and the things that she has to deal with as a master vampire, and, you know, her titles and what it means for her to have those titles and to run Cold Crypt Cellars. And you meet her father, you meet some of the Vampire Council, you get to see the runnings of her home life and whatnot. And the more I work on the series, the more it's just like, I have to write more, and I keep coming up with more things to do and more ideas. And right now I've got plans for the next 18 books.
That's exciting. I mean, you know, I never run out of stuff to write about. I don't know. You know, people always ask me, how do you keep coming up with ideas? I'm like, are you seeing the world around us? I mean, there's always right. ideas. You know, I get ideas from the strangest things. That say, well, what would happen if a supernatural creature did something like that, you know? And then it's like, okay, and now it's a whole thing. And you're right. I mean, there's so much you can explore in any character's life, especially someone with, the intrigue and the power struggle that goes on, obviously, in types of things that she's dealing with.
I really think I don't know how to stop coming up with ideas, I guess is the way to put it. You know, even if you just look at politics alone, there's so much there to play with. If you turn it into a supernatural arena where you have these beings that are, you know, superhuman strong and superhuman fast and have all these abilities, and it's like, okay, so put them in a position of power, and politics is suddenly a whole different arena. Or, you know, day-to-day life, you know, what if you were one religious belief and got turned into a vampire, shapeshifter, whatever? Does that change your religious views? Does that change your family life? Does that change your personal views of yourself?
Well, and to get back on, you know, the situations that go on in today's world, you know, there's so many people, you know, families that had one set of viewpoints until they discovered, you know, a loved one who comes out for one reason or another as you know, gay or lesbian or trans or anything.
Oh, absolutely.
And those families come face to face with, and I'm seeing it in friends of ours right now that come face to face with their previous set of moral values and the conflict between this person that they know and love and that, you know, that struggle within themselves. And, it's just interesting to watch from a distance. You know, my youngest daughter is a lesbian and she's very out, and we're very open and supportive of that. But to see other people, you know, kind of struggle because they aren't quite as accepting, or weren't, I would say, because I haven't seen anything really super negative, which has been at least among my own circle of friends, which is helpful. But, you know, I think that same thing, you know, is important to write into our books.
I agree with you completely. And my youngest daughter came out 2 weeks ago as bisexual. Myself, I'm pansexual. So our family is really open about lifestyles and sexuality, and a lot of that goes into my books because I try to be very open-minded about pretty much everything. And my, that's the way I was raised, but seeing, you know, the community react to, well, you know, you can't just decide that you're not this gender or that gender. And it's like, I didn't decide to be anything other than I am. This is just who I am. This is how I want to present myself. And, you know, our family has been amazing about being accepting of, you know, non-standard heterosexual, conforming belief systems and sexualities and everything. And people that I would think would be completely okay with it have turned into horrible people about it. And people that I was like, oh God, I can't believe I'm going to have to tell you this, are like, oh honey, that's fine. We love you. It's okay.
Yeah. It's surprising to us too, in some ways, you know, and it's just interesting to see all of that reflected in our books. And, you know, my goal has always been to kind of just kind of sneak it in there with an alternative topic. Just finished up a trilogy that's kind of a cyberpunk near future dystopian thing. And the main character is a lesbian and has a girlfriend, but that's not the issue. That's an issue that doesn't have any problem in her world. The issue that people have with her is that she has a cybernetic part. And so it's like this whole anti-cyber thing. And they don't think she's human because she had to have part of her brain replaced because of an injury. And, you know, so that's the whole issue in that world is. And so I kind of addressed the problem of prejudice but doing it in a way that people can kind of just step away back from and use it in a fictional sense.
I absolutely love that. That's amazing.
So, yeah, but it was fun to write and, you know, dig into the relationship and stuff and not have it be an issue. You know, they just like everybody just accepts it because it's 50 years from now and the world is a different place. And, you know, but we have a problem with the fact that you like have a bionic eye.
You know? I love it. That's perfect.
So, so let's shift gears a little bit because I was looking at some of the things that you do for fun. I have a questionnaire people that I send to the authors, and
I'm sure that was a fun read.
It was a fun read because I am totally obsessed with Assassin's Creed and the Elder Scrolls. And I'm like, oh, I found a kindred spirit.
I've been gaming. I've been PC gaming since I can remember. I mean, I remember my first Nintendo. I mean, I had an Atari at one point. I mean, that should tell you how old I am.
All right, we're not even going to go into the. I actually go back to the old Tandy computer where you played a cassette to play the game.
Yep, yeah. I remember this too.
So yeah, I see. Like,
I love gaming. Gaming is, you know, you get into it and there's a story unfolds and you learn the characters and you learn the ins and outs, and each adventure expands into another adventure. And I mean, in Elder Scrolls, the adventures are literally endless.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed so much about video games and the genesis of them, you know, back in the beginning, they were just platform games. You know, you'd go across, you know, you'd be Mario and you'd go across the world and you'd jump into the tubes and out of the tubes and catch the coins and everything else that you do. And then games with stories started to develop, and you had all of the games with, you know, with Link and all of them. They just, and now you've got games that are like cinematic multi movie ventures. I mean, they're not even a single film. They're multi-film because they last for 40, 50 hours of cinematic fun in a world.
Yeah, and I love games like that because I never get bored with them. I mean, please don't get me wrong. I still play, like, my hack and slash games. Like, my daughter and I play Soul Calibur. And I have all of the Soul Calibur games for all the platforms because why not? Because each platform has a different special character and I want to play them all. But I'll sit down and play Assassin's Creed for, you know, 3-4 hours. And it's like, wow, I found another story loop. Let me go this way. Wait, I can do that. Let me go that way. it's endless adventure. You know, you've got 40, 50 hours of storyline, and then you have all the extra sub content in the background that you can do.
Yeah. And I think with Odyssey, they found themselves again, because I think they kind of got off track. And then since the whole Ezio storyline, and then all of a sudden they found themselves again in Odyssey, and it just,
absolutely.
It plays so much like those first couple of games. Whenever a new Assassin's Creed game comes out, I like block time ahead of time where I'm going to do nothing but play Assassin's Creed for like 2 weeks. I don't write any books. I don't do any editing. I get like 2 weeks of downtime a year when I'm not working on book stuff. And it's when the Assassin's Creed game comes out. So
that's funny. I love it.
But yeah, it's interesting to see how story is really coming out in so many ways, in so many awesome fantasy genres, represented in gaming, post-apocalyptic stuff and all that thing. It really is inspiring in its own sense. It's almost as if we talked about reading a lot earlier. I think you gain as much from watching the stories develop in games too.
I agree. I think even especially with gaming, you learn how to write a better story, write a better tale. Because when you're running through the game, you're learning visual aspects, you're world building as you game. And I think that reflects a lot in, at least for me, my work. And I know a couple authors that game as well, that reflects in their work. You know, I mean, with Assassin's Creed, you start learning about, these cities that you're in. And so you want to know more about it. And so you get off the game and you go online and you look up, Florence or wherever. And you start looking at it and it's like, oh, that building really existed. Well, here's the history of it. Well, this builds that and this builds that. And suddenly you have this character that was born in the city that you have this entire map laid out of because, well, you spent 3.5 hours playing a game in that city.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny. I think we were playing Assassin's Creed 2 and as a family, and the kids were younger. I can't believe it's been that long ago since it came out. But we all went to Disney World together as a family, and we were at Epcot, and there's like an Italy world there. And we got to the section of Epcot that's set up like Italy, and we all like started looking up at these tall towers, and we're like, man, Ezio could so climb that. And it was like a family like thing. It was like looking around going, yeah, we could see him jumping from this to that. But I love the depth that they go into in their games with historical research, because I am the guy that actually goes and reads about the buildings. In the extra content that they provide in the save screen and stuff. So I just find that fascinating.
Mythology and mythology, theology, and history are all big hobbies of mine. And so a lot of my reading habits end up going, I'll start reading a book and it'll be like, oh, it's based in the city. And so I'll go look up the history of that city and the parks they're in and the places around it. And, Cold Crypt Sellers is based in Columbus, where I currently live. And like I said, it's supposed to be the trilogy, and I'd planned it all being in Columbus. And all of a sudden, I've got this like 20 book series planned. But I started doing research of where would this be? Where would that be? Well, where would this be? Where would that be? What route would you take? Where would you go from here to there to there to there? And I'm suddenly studying the origins of the founding of Ohio and everything. It's equivalent, I guess, of a wiki walk, but I just. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And I'm back playing Assassin's Creed and I went, oh, hey, I remember this from that one book I read and this location is there. And wow, it really exists. Cool.
Yeah, it's fun when you do that and you get to explore different parts of the world in your books and share your knowledge of, I write a lot about Maryland and the Baltimore area because that's where I live. And so a lot of my books are set in and around there. And I like to share the culture and the history of this place with my readers.
Absolutely.
And I love hearing from people from the area who read my books and go, oh, wow, I love that. And that you worked this into the story. And, because there's creepy places wherever you go, right? So you can.
Oh, absolutely.
You can work them. You can work this local legend into your storyline in some way. And it makes people smile. It's kind of like an Easter egg.
Yeah, I love that aspect. The book I'm working on, Behind the Mask, is based in California, where I grew up, and the people in my, I guess, alpha group, for lack of a better word, that have kind of skimmed through the first 17, 18, 19 chapters have been like, oh my gosh, wait, I know exactly where that's at. Isn't that off this one turn off? You can take this. And I'm like, yeah, it's off that back road. And they're like, I didn't know anybody knew about that. Yeah, so I get it. It's fun.
And let's just, for the readers out there that listen to the show, you know, alphas are kind of our first set of readers that kind of go through our books. And they get a chance to see some of the stuff we work on, warts and all. And, you know, their job is to kind of give us some ideas on where the story works and where it doesn't work so well, so that when we get the final version out to the next group, which is the beta readers, they can kind of clean up any last minute things. My alpha reader is my wife primarily. But for some people, it can be a group of their favorite, you know, readers or closest friends or some collection of that. Every author comes at that different ways, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. My alpha readers are mostly my family, my mother, my brother, my fiance, and a couple of friends of mine. I've got five people that I kind of throw my manuscript out and be like, please tell me where I messed up.
No, and that's so important because, you know, as indies, we don't have like that traditional editor.
Correct.
That, you know, that's doing developmental editing for us. So we rely on our alpha and beta teams to kind of, you know, do that quick check. And often what I'm amused by is they know my story so much better than I do. You know, I'll forget I wrote, you know, a section or a subplot at some point and answered a question, and they'll catch me on it later on if I mess up. You know, they're very good at that.
Yeah, I found that when I wrote Cold Crypt Cellars, I thought I'd gone through, I did multiple personal edits, I changed a lot of stuff, I fixed a lot of errors. I said, okay, guys, here's the manuscript. And they're like, yeah, but remember that you said you wanted to do this one thing and you didn't do that and you changed this thing. And, well, I really like this thing better and it totally fits the character better. I'm like, isn't this my character that I'm writing? They're like, yeah, but this works better.
Yeah, well, but, you know, there's something about communicating with readers about your books and about your characters, especially because it means you're making connection with a reader, and which is really kind of part of the reason we write.
No, absolutely.
And so when you reach out to people, is there a way, as we kind of wind down here, is there a way you prefer to interact online or in person, or do you ever go to cons or things like that?
I do go to cons, but I won't be for another year because I'm having shoulder surgery and back surgery in the next few months. That's going to have me down and not allowed to drive or really walk for about 6 months. But online, I am on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, and I'm on Twitter. Twitter and Instagram, you can find me at JR Fyre with a Y, FYRE, Dancer. Which is a play on my given name. And then Facebook, you can find me on Facebook /author JR O'Brien, or you can look up the Christiana Aramis fan group page, which was just started about a week ago. And I already have a little over 100 members. I'm kind of scared.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Welcome to the world of Facebook groups. It's a lot of fun. And, I'll have to look up that link and share it in my group too, because I'm sure they'd love to check out your books. The next book coming out sometime early 2020?
Early 2020.
Awesome.
Hopefully no later than March.
Excellent. Well, listen, thanks for coming on the show, JR. I think we could probably talk about a lot more stuff, gaming included, even more. But we have to cut this short. So I want to thank you for coming on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. And, you know, good luck with your next release and your surgeries as well. I wish you the best. That's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy and sci-fi focused community. They've changed the name since we've got some sci-fi stuff going on in there too. You can find them over on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode over there at the website and let me know what's on your mind. I'd love to hear from you and love to hear your response to these interviews. Also on the website where the podcast episodes are posted, right below the audio player at the top of each post, you'll find links to subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of them. And that's important because we have some pretty awesome authors scheduled to come up in the next few weeks and months, and you won't want to miss any of them. That's it, though, for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook, on my Facebook fan group, reader group over at Jamie Davis Books as well, and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. If you want to, you can head over there and get a free book to check out what I write and how I write it. And all you have to do is sign up for the newsletter while you're over there and get that free book. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, don't forget, because I'm always reminding you, make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.